Welcome back to Voices from the Front Lines. We are going to play right now a clip that the Black commentator did and Glenn Ford did for the Black commentator. We'll be right back with Glenn Ford right afterwards.
We at Black Commentator have found it very disturbing to witness the vehement and sometimes verbally violent reaction to our support for the rights of Latino immigrants. It is also quite upsetting to see Black legislators making common cause with the most racist elements of the Democratic and Republican parties in proposing draconian measures to criminalize those who are undocumented. It is an extremely stupid approach to the liberation of Black people, which can only happen in an environment where everyone is liberated. That's why, historically, Black people have been in the forefront of society-wide liberation, because we knew that was in our own best interest. And our elected representatives have historically understood this paradigm. But there's a new group out there who somehow believe that there's a political profit in aligning Blacks with nativist whites, who actively agitate against Black interests as well as those of Latinos. This is insane. The greatest political challenge facing African Americans in the urban centers is to find common ground with Latinos. Such ground can be found in the common need for employment at a living wage and the struggle against gentrification. This struggle is not about who outnumbers who, but how a better United States can be created. We do not get there by joining forces with those who have made the United States such an often horrific place for Black people. The people who were responsible for those crimes were not Latinos, and the driving forces behind criminalizing Latino immigrants are the same ones that have criminalized whole Black communities and created an African-American gulag in the nation's prisons. Black people do not have to like Latinos or their culture, nor do they have to like ours. What is important is to act in our common interest. Immigrants with no rights bring down the standard of living for all of us. Don't fight the immigrants. Fight the people who seek to create a subterranean class of workers whose very presence diminishes the bargaining power of every other American. Labor campaigns such as Justice for Janitors, which engages predominantly Latino workers, have proven that immigrants are anxious to improve their standard of living, to fight for a living wage. When immigrants are paid a living wage, the standards of civilized labor are made stronger for everyone. But when a whole class of people are made criminals, as Black people are and have often been made criminals, then the bar of civilization plummets straight to the bottom, as do wages. African Americans have no stake in nativist whites' desire to keep the U.S. of A. white. We do have a stake in influencing the political behavior of Latino immigrants, with whom we must negotiate for control of the cities. It is a fool's game to side with the enemy in this historic encounter. We know who the enemy is, the same one who brought us to this country in chains, who is also the same one who stole half of Mexico. Let's not be confused. For Radio BC, I'm Glenn Ford.
The voices from the front lines, listeners, let's stay with that. Let's not get confused on it. So we want to welcome to the show right now Glenn Ford, who is the co-publisher for the Black Commentator, an online progressive black journal at www.blackcommentator.com. Prior to this, Glenn has served as editor and reporter for a number of newspapers and is the author of The Big Lie, analysis of U.S. press coverage of the Grenada invasion. Ford's latest commentary, The Insanity of Black Anti-Immigrant Politics, can be found at the blackcommentator.com. Glenn, welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks for inviting me, and thanks for playing the commentary.
Yes. So why don't we just start off, Glenn, where are the hearts and minds of black people right now?
Well, it depends on where you are. There is a distinct difference between the situation in the Northeast historically, where the large initial Hispanic concentration was Puerto Ricans, who arrived in those big cities shortly after World War II in very large numbers, which is about the time of the third great black migration to the cities. So the Puerto Ricans were arriving at the same time as even larger numbers of blacks. Residential segregation was certainly in full force, very rigid, and blacks and Puerto Ricans lived in the same neighborhoods or adjacent neighborhoods. And Puerto Ricans being largely of African descent and blacks formed a kind of political alliance that continues to this day. So there is a different situation in Philadelphia, in New York, and even in Chicago. In the South, however, the black-white paradigm has existed for hundreds of years. And the Hispanic presence, which is overwhelmingly Mexican, is very new. Industries like the poultry industry, which is very low wage, very oppressive, very bad working conditions, was almost entirely black in many, many places in the South. Mexicans are now heavily employed in that industry. So the problem in the South is most acute in terms of black-Latino relationships, because the jobs that people say Americans don't want to do, well, blacks were doing those jobs. And also, it is difficult, having lived in a solely black-white paradigm for so long, for many blacks to acclimate themselves well, to figure out who are these people. So that's where the great confusion and contradictions, where the contradictions are most acute politically.
And in terms of actually the jobs that, you know, and in the history have been for black people, is it the same pay structure, or has it been through the kind of busting of unions and stripping down of benefits and wages that they're now lower paying, less protected jobs, or they still?
Well, of course, the South is the most anti-union section of the country. And but there's a misconception here about immigrants taking black folks' jobs and being eager to work for low wages. The hierarchy of eagerness to join unions is this, and it's in descending order. The most eager, number one, black women. Number two, black men. Number three, Hispanic women. Number four, Hispanic men. Number five, white women. Number six, at the bottom of the scale, white men, and many Latinos. And here in the Northeast, the Latino population comes from all over Latin America, from the Andes, from everywhere. And in many of these countries, there are stronger union traditions than we have in the United States. And traditions of union organizing and peasant organizing under conditions where you could get a bullet in your head for performing a union.
Right.
So it is not that Latinos are not willing to fight for a living wage, but they cannot fight for a living wage and create conditions in which everybody would want to work on that job if they are harried and oppressed and chased around and forced into an underground, what is essentially an underground economy that is maintained by very much above ground corporations.
That's right. Yeah, well, I think one thing is interesting when we think about this as one of the cards that the right wing is playing. So if we look back in 2004, it was the right wing who was going to black churches and saying, hey, gay people are trying to get married. It's bad. You don't want that. You need to fight against that. And I think The same thing is starting to happen around the immigration issue, is really trying to galvanize, like you were saying, the black community in terms of being in solidarity more with kind of the white American people as opposed to the people who are just, you know, are oppressed also. So what, on what levels is there pushback in terms of the Congressional Black Caucus, in terms of folks like the NAACP, in terms of progressive black media? I mean, besides yourself and us, like, what does that look like in terms of reframing the debate?
The traditional black institutions have been right on about this. They haven't deviated from a progressive stance. All but one of the Congressional Black Caucus, for example, in the House, voted against the Republican measure. The one who voted for it was Harold Ford of Tennessee, who wants to become the first black senator from that state. In Atlanta, the heir apparent to Mayor Shirley Franklin, he's a state senator called, whose name is Kasim Reed, has introduced a measure, co-sponsored at least, a measure in that legislature that is even more harsh than the Republican measure. Now, he's probably going to be the first, the next, rather, black mayor. And that would be the worst of all worlds, because we would have a very bad black mayor, and we would also have one who has further driven a wedge between black people and the Latino population. That's the worst that could possibly happen. It's happening on the opportunistic political front, not at the institutional level of the Black Caucus as a whole, or the NAACP, or the Urban League, et cetera. And I'll give you another example. In Newark, New Jersey, a person who is clearly a shill for the white corporate right, his name is Cory Booker, will likely become the next mayor of Newark. And Newark was once considered the quintessentially chocolate city.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, now it's only 53% black. Now, that's not mainly because of white gentrification, although that is a small factor. It's because Newark is now 30% Latino. And Cory Booker has learned to speak Spanish and cultivated relations with Latinos. So we're going to be, it's going to be impossible for us to elect not black mayors, but progressive black mayors, if alliances are not forged with the growing Latino population. New York, for the first time in modern history, lost black population between 2000 and 2004, 30,000 less black folks, mainly due to gentrification. That means that the alliance, the political alliance between blacks and Latinos, is more necessary than ever, so that we don't get mayors like Republican Bloomberg. So it's not a matter of folk liking each other or street corner resentments. It's a matter of necessity. Black people must come to grips with the Latino presence. There is no choice.
So in terms of just the Congressional Black Caucus, the second bill, the McCain-Kennedy bill, which is, you know, got Kennedy's name on it, where are folks on that? And then I say, secondly, the Sheila Jackson Lee bill, which I hear is more progressive, what's going on with that?
Well, the caucus can't do anything about that. That's going to be in conference between the
right, because there's only one black senator, right?
That's right.
Well, in terms of actually, well, okay, so then the bigger question is, even though they might not be voting on it, there is the ability to actually take a stand on it, be more vocal on it. Clearly, there were people around New Orleans, you know, in the Katrina crisis, is that people actually said stuff. They actually did an omnibus or whatnot. Is there anything like that that's coming out of the House?
Out of the Congressional Black Caucus, you mean?
Yes.
I doubt it. The Congressional Black Caucus is not well-led at this moment. It is not coherent. To tell the truth, they probably voted almost unanimously on the right side of the issue because Pelosi told them to. Mel Watt has not shown great leadership I would not expect that there would be a real stand-up demonstration of any militancy on the part of the caucus as a whole. Now, of course, individual members will do their thing.
So, Glenn,
that's pretty damn sad, isn't it?
That's a whole other show we could do.
I wanted to put some hope out there that maybe something changed since last night, but
Nah, nothing changed.
So then you heard the last guest that we had on, Javier Rodriguez.
Yes.
And his the call by the coalition to have a May 1st kind of general strike.
Yes.
In terms of that, has there been any traction or motion that you've heard of within the Black community, at least parts of it, that are taking up that call?
No, and, you know, we've had our own calls for general strikes based on our own issues, and they haven't generated much support either. So I would not read into Black apathy or indifference to that general strike necessarily hostility. We haven't acted in mass in terms of withdrawal of our labor for a very, very long time for causes that we believe deeply in. These are infrastructural problems in the Black community. They do not necessarily reflect a hostility to the movement that Latinos are so magnificently waging.
So, and we have about a minute left, and I want Glenn Ford's prescription on what is actually going to make the Black community fight.
When it realizes its own self-interest, the new Latino arrivals, the new population, has much interest in stopping rampant gentrification as we do, or else they won't have a hold in the cities that they just arrived in. I'm not talking about Los Angeles, where people have been for a very long time, but this new wave. There is common cause there, and gentrification is one of the two top or three top issues in Black America. And certainly, in terms of a living wage, Blacks and Latinos have common cause. So we need to organize around these issues and stop talking about how the Irish pushed us out of the docks and out of the domestic and catering industries in the 1840s. It's in our interest, and I'm sure that responsible progressive Latino leadership, such as the brother that you had on the show, will recognize the same thing.
Well, thank you, Glenn Ford. That's Glenn Ford. You can catch him at theblackcommentator.com. That's the end of today's show. You know, this is Voices from the Frontlines. This is Manuel Criollo with Damon Azali. Thanks for joining us. We'd like to thank our guests today, Javier Rodriguez and Glenn Ford. Today we had music from Oso Motley, Amparo Ochoa, and El Gran Silencio. You can listen to previous Voices show at www.thestrategycenter.org and send comments to voices@thestrategycenter.org. We'd like to thank our producer, Alan Minsky, production assistant, Lisa Aller, our engineer, Maggie LaPique. We'll see you next week from Voices from the Frontlines Radio. Don't miss this evening, 8 p.m., the strategy session with Antonio Gonzalez. And up next is Beneath the Surface with Susie Wiseman.